Hello, and welcome to In Conversation With, a podcast from The Lancet Neurology. I'm Heather Brown, one of the journal's senior editors. For our October 2023 podcast, I'm pleased to be talking to Professor Anthony Feinstein from the University of Toronto and Sunnybrook Health Sciences Centre, both in Toronto and Canada. Professor Feinstein is corresponding author of a research paper in the October 2023 issue of The Lancet Neurology that reports results from COGEX, a randomised sham-controlled trial of cognitive rehabilitation and aerobic exercise for cognitive impairment in people with progressive multiple sclerosis. Hello, Professor Feinstein. Many thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.
How common is cognitive impairment in people with MS?
So, cognitive difficulties are very common. It depends on your disease course. If you've got relapsing remitting multiple sclerosis, the rates of impairment are about 40%. When you get towards the progressive, more advanced forms of the disease, primary and secondary progressive, MS, the rates go up to about 70 to 80%. You will also find cognitive difficulties in individuals who are yet to be diagnosed with the full MS spectrum. For example, people with clinically isolated syndrome, which is often the precursor to multiple sclerosis, you can find cognitive deficits in about 30% of those individuals. And even when you look at individuals with radiologically isolated lesions, so they have an MRI pattern that looks like MS, but they haven't declared physically, those individuals can have cognitive impairment in about 30% of cases. And these findings are really important because cognitive difficulties correlate strongly with your ability to sustain employment, to manage your relationships, and to complete activities of daily living. And from a neurological perspective, if you've got cognitive difficulties in the context of a clinically isolated syndrome, it predicts earlier conversion to full multiple sclerosis. So there are multiple reasons why we have to take cognition seriously.
What interventions are currently available? What previous trials have been done before for cognition in MS?
So there are some medication trials, stimulant medication, or the memory-enhancing drugs that are used in Alzheimer's disease, for example, and those studies have almost uniformly been negative. There are also those disease-modified drugs that people with multiple sclerosis take, in which cognition has been added onto clinical trials as a secondary or a tertiary outcome measure. So the primary focus was not on cognition. These disease-modified drugs, for the most part prescribed for people with relapsing remitting multiple sclerosis, do show some mild cognitive benefits, although there are some negative findings as well. Perhaps the most rewarding area that's emerged over the last few years is in relation to cognitive rehabilitation. These are generally small studies, small sample sizes, single center, but there are some positive results with a modest effect size. Therapy can gear towards processing speed deficits or memory problems or executive dysfunction, and there are a number of positive results here. It is important to note that for the most part, these studies involve people with relapsing remitting multiple sclerosis, not progressive MS, and there are small sample sizes.
So how did that lead to the study you did? Why did you choose to test both computerized cognitive training and aerobic exercise in people with progressive MS?
So just going to go back a little. This study, our COGEX study, arose from an initiative that started about 10 years back with the Progressive Multiple Sclerosis Alliance, which is a combination of MS societies and MS organizations from multiple countries that got together with the specific aim of focusing on people with progressive MS. There was a recognition that the field thus far had been focused more on people with relapsing remitting MS, and there were no good treatments for people with progressive MS. And one of the remits of the Progressive MS Alliance was to have a look at behavioral abnormalities in people with MS, including cognition. And that's how our group got together. So our group came together from Canada, United Kingdom, United States, Italy, Belgium, and Denmark. And we decided to look at cognition exclusively in people with progressive MS. Because these individuals have a high rate of cognitive dysfunction, and because of the more advanced nature of the disease, we wanted to come up with an intervention that we thought would give people the best chance of improvement. And so we decided on a double strategy, that we would use cognitive rehabilitation, because there is some promising data in the literature, but also aerobic exercise. The cognitive literature in relation to aerobic exercise is more equivocal, but there are a couple of studies that suggest it might be helpful. So we thought that if we combined these two interventions, we would get a synergistic effect that might be able to shift cognitive difficulties in the more advanced forms of multiple sclerosis. And so we focused on processing speed, which is considered the quintessential cognitive difficulty in people with MS. And we have a very good measure of processing speed, which is a symbol digit modality test. It's considered a sentinel cognitive test for people with MS. It's a test that takes about 90 seconds, and people with MS are very comfortable with it. So that became the focus of our study.
And what were the control interventions?
So we brought in two sham controls, one sham cognitive rehab, which had people sit in front of a computer and search the internet, but they weren't given cognitively demanding tasks. And they would spend the same amount of time with the sham cognitive rehabilitation intervention as the individuals who were randomized to receive the cognitive rehabilitation itself. And the second sham was an exercise sham, things like stretching and trunk rotation, etc. But we designed the sham exercise so that it wouldn't have an aerobic component and it wouldn't put a strain on the cardiovascular system. So ultimately, we had four groups. We had those individuals who did cognitive rehabilitation and exercise, cognitive rehabilitation and sham exercise, exercise and sham cognitive rehabilitation, and then the double sham, sham exercise and sham cognitive rehabilitation. So four arms to the study.
And who was eligible to take part in the trial?
So we were very careful in selecting our participants. They had to have progressive multiple sclerosis, primary or secondary, the diagnosis confirmed by a neurologist. We kept our sample age under 65. We wanted to make sure that all participants were cognitively impaired when we enrolled them. We didn't want to put people into a study who were cognitively intact. And so they had to fail the symbol digit modality test, and we defined that as a score of 1.282 standard deviations below the norm. And because our study was done in multiple countries with multiple languages, we used each country-specific normative database. And we have that for the symbol digit modality test. We have normative data from Italy, Denmark, Belgium, etc., Canada. So they were cognitively impaired to begin with. We also kept their disability score, the EDSS score, the Expanded Disability Status Scale score. We kept it under 7. If it's 7 or above, you're in a wheelchair. So we did not want participants with a wheelchair. But we did want individuals who were disabled. And we ended up having a median EDSS score of 6, which speaks to a high level of physical disability in our sample. We also wanted people who had not been exercising a lot before the study. We didn't want to bring in individuals who were already well-conditioned physically. Just as we didn't want to include people who were cognitively intact, we didn't want physically fit people as well, because we wanted to show that exercise would have a benefit. We excluded people who had another central nervous system disorder. Individuals with a major mental illness, such as a bipolar illness, were excluded. And then individuals had to have sufficient visual acuity that allowed them to see the test material.
And what were your main findings?
So our primary outcome measure was symbol digit modality test score at 12 weeks. So all individuals got 12 weeks of therapy, 2 sessions a week. So they would have had 24 sessions of cognitive rehabilitation exercise or the sham interventions. And at 12 weeks, we had a look at the symbol digit modality test score. And our primary hypothesis was that the group with the combined exercise and cognitive rehabilitation would show greater improvement relative to either intervention alone, and that each intervention alone would show more improvement than the sham groups. But we didn't find that. Our main hypothesis wasn't upheld. In fact, all four groups had similar SDMT scores, symbol digit modality test scores at 12 weeks. So our primary outcome did not reveal or did not support our primary hypothesis. However, what we did see, and we didn't expect this, is that all four groups improved on the SDMT. And quite a lot. Now, the symbol digit modality test is interesting because there are 2 threshold scores that have clinical relevance. If your performance changes by 4 points, and this is global data, that's considered important, significant. If on an individual level, the score changes by 8 points or more, that's also considered significant. And with that in mind, we saw that in our sample, 60% of the group overall had a 4-point or more change at 12 weeks. When we looked at our 6-month data, so, you know, interventions ended after 12 weeks, but we went back into the 6-month assessment to see whether the benefits were still there. When we looked at our 6-month data, we found that 46% of our sample still showed a 4-point or more change on the symbol digit modality test. When we used the 8-point threshold for individual data, we showed that at 12 weeks, 37% of our sample had improved by 8 points or more. And by 6 months, 26% of our sample had improved. So what we were able to demonstrate, and we did not know this before we started the CARTRIX trial, was that people with aggressive multiple sclerosis can indeed improve their cognition with either exercise or cognitive rehabilitation.
What are the main limitations of your study?
Well, we didn't support our primary hypothesis. In retrospect, I think it would have been useful to have a more passive control group. You know, we thought that we were introducing a sham exercise group and a sham cognitive rehabilitation, but in fact, we saw benefits with our sham interventions, so they were not passive. I think one of the reasons for that is that those individuals who got sham exercise actually improved their walking. We saw improvement on the 6-minute walk test, and there's some data to suggest that if you're walking better, your processing speed improves. So we didn't anticipate that to begin with. I think if we had brought in a completely passive control group, in other words, 12 weeks of wait and see, and then, you know, compare the data from that group to combined exercise and cognitive rehab, we might have got some more interesting data. So our sham didn't turn out to be sham. The other very big challenge that we faced was the pandemic, which struck us in the middle of this, you know, multi-center, very intense rehabilitation study, and it basically shut down projects for many months. And that delayed sample recruitment. So when we put our grant together, we had a projected sample size of 360 people. We ended up with 311, which was still, you know, very significant size sample. We think that on balance, even if we added 10 extra participants to each group, we probably still would have got exactly the same result, because when you look at our SDMT scores at 12 weeks, they are very similar across all four groups. So adding 10 patients to each group, we don't think would have shifted the needle with this.
What are the priorities for future research into cognitive impairment in people with MS?
So, you know, I think it'd be a nice idea to go back and do a study like this or a similar study like this and bring in a more passive control group. I think that would be helpful. And why is that important? Because when you do longitudinal cognitive studies, people can get better from practice alone. Now, we don't think practice could account for all the improvement in our study, but I think if you've got a more passive group, it might control for that. I also think that we need to, you know, bring an end to these very small single-center studies. We've done enough of those now. We need to have collaborative efforts in which you can boost your sample size so you can get a better statistical power, and to demonstrate that interventions can work across multiple centers. I think that's very important. And then I think we have to mine rich databases like our cognitive data set to see, are we able to find those variables that can predict which individuals improve with cognition? You know, I mentioned that 60% of our sample showed a 4-point or more improvement on the SDMT at 12 weeks. Well, what is it about the 60%? What is it about the demographics, the neurological disease? What is it about their response to aerobic exercise? Or how do they respond to the cognitive rehabilitation? Can we go in and mine that data to see whether we can come up with some predictors of their improvement? In our study, we also had brain imaging in a third of our sample, and we haven't analyzed these data yet. But all, you know, this third had structural imaging and functional MRI. And MRI can give us potentially a biomarker of who is going to respond to the kind of interventions that we provided to our participants. So I think, you know, being smart about design is going to be very important. We also need to look at those individuals who didn't improve. What was it about their characteristics that made them resistant to exercise or cognitive rehabilitation? And so by getting a better understanding of individual characteristics, I think we can come up with smarter, better designed trials. I think the days of one-size-fits-all therapy is gone. We need to be more strategic and more focused in our future efforts.
Many thanks for taking the time to talk to us today.
Well, my pleasure.
Thank you for listening to this episode of In Conversation with The Lancet Neurology. You can read the report of the COGEX trial online now at thelancet.com, and you can subscribe to In Conversation with The Lancet Neurology wherever you usually get your podcasts.